Today's podcast brought to you by Elders and Reinagard by Zoetis. Welcome once again to the Beef Central podcast series on the grill. I'm Kerry Lonigan, and today a look back at some of the history of one of the most significant operators in the history of the Australian pastoral business. Now, that business is the Australian Agricultural Company, AACo it's known as, this year celebrating its 200th anniversary. It's been a remarkable journey, and today it's my pleasure to speak with a bloke who has shared most of his working life with that recognised acronym, AACo, the one-time General Manager of the AACo, Jeff Wagstaff. Jeff, welcome.
Thanks, Kerry. Pleasure to be here.
Now, before we get to AACo, let's have a look at your background. You are from the land, but unlike others, you went straight out of school to jackarooing in the far north. Where exactly was your first experience in that big cattle country?
After school, I had a couple of months at Malvern Hills of Blackall with my father, where he managed the sheep and cattle property there. And after that, I went to Wandoola, which is just outside, well, not just outside, but outside Normanton in the Gulf. And yep. At that time, that was owned by Dalgetty, who also owned Arm Randall. So we used to do the work at Wandoola, then move over to Arm Randall, then come back to Wandoola.
So when did you get to the King Ranch properties? Did they sell, or did Dalgetty sell to King Ranch, or was it another voyage?
As far as I know, well, Dalgetty changed hands a few times, as you would know. But
they did, yes, indeed.
I'm not sure. Well, I know who owns Wandoola now. That's owned by AA Company. That's all recent history, really, in the big picture.
So you got to the King Ranch Company, which is well established by then, I assume?
King Ranch Australia, yes. Yeah. Well, I moved from Wandoola to Milton Park at Barrel.
All right, okay. That's a big change from the Gulf Country down to Barrel.
Oh, it was. It was good, very extensive in the Gulf and very intensive at Milton Park. Milton Park is where they had 3,000 acres right on the outskirts of Barrel, owned by King Ranch, and they ran the Santa Gertrudis.
Did you manage to get a couple of 100 acres in your pocket yourself at the time? Or
I wish I had it.
No, indeed. It's a very trendy part of the world at the moment.
It's covered in houses now. It used to be covered in Santa Gertrudis cattle and quarter horse.
Right. Now, so you went from Barrel back north. Where did you end up there?
I went to Mount House in the Kimberley, outside Derby, King Leopold Rangers. Being King Ranch, we had a Santa Gertrudis stud at Mount House, which in those days, in any days, very different and very hard to do with clean skin cattle running around outside the perimeter of the stud, so it was very challenging.
King Ranch American, of course, they brought the Santa cattle from the United States, I assume.
Yes, that's correct. And they went to Milton Park from Texas, as did the quarter horses. Obviously, King Ranch are big in the quarter horses as well, and the quarter horses came across live to Milton Park.
Yeah.
And Redford Park. Redford Park is where the quarter horse stud was situated, which joined, it's all one block of land, but it was two different addresses, if you like.
Yeah, that Santa influence at that time across the north cannot be underestimated. They took over from Shorthorns, did they not? Is that what happened?
That's correct, especially on the Barkly, all those places were all Shorthorn, and then the influence of the Santa Gertrudis, they slowly, probably took 10 years or more for the coloured cattle to disappear, and the Santa Gertrudis, the red cattle, were predominant all over those properties in the north.
Why were the Santa so much better than the Shorthorns?
I don't say they're so much better. I think being King Ranch, they obviously wanted to bring their own stamp on that country.
Yeah.
And way back then, like, there wasn't the boars and the watering facilities there are now, and a lot of cattle found it, very difficult to get out to feed and also get, walk for kilometres back to water. So Santa Gertrudis cattle could do that, seemed to be able to do that a lot better than the Shorthorn.
Was that in the 70s, early 70s?
Yeah, that's correct, Well, King Ranch put, in the 1950s, put some Santa Gertrudis into Brunette Downs and built a stud there.
Yeah.
Santa Gertrudis stud,
Is that just about the time when the brucellosis bovine TB campaign got underway, isn't it?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. It was. That was a really made those properties so much different and harder to manage because of the, you know, the TB was bad, the brucellosis was bad. We got rid of brucellosis because we could vaccinate for that, as well as thousands and thousands, hundreds of thousands of cattle were tested, you know, and reactors had to be retested or shot and, and post-mortem, and same with the TB. It was a terrible time, really. You had to do things on stations that you... you know, weren't done today because you don't have to.
Yeah, the program started with some cynicism, I would think, about the chances of success, but it was, in the end, an outstanding success, wasn't it?
Well, it took a long time, like years, to get rid of it. But
just got a note here. No brucellosis since 1989 and no TB in Australian cattle since 1997. It was a remarkable scheme.
It was,
Now,
and anyone that was involved in it would understand it was a... you know, it was a terrible time to be on a cattle station, really. Yeah. It was a lot of hard work, a lot of work, that, you know, a lot of mismothering and stuff that you don't like to see that was just happening because cattle had to be held
that
3 days.
It's paid for itself 20 times over since, hasn't it? Now, Brunette Downs, that's a legendary name in the cattle business. What was that like?
Oh, it's a magnificent property. Yeah. It's over 12,000 square kilometres of beautiful country, and the big thing about Brunette is the lake system on there. I know when we had good rain at Brunette and I was there, you know, the lake could be, people always used to ask me, is the lake full? But it never, it gets, just doesn't, it doesn't, it just gets bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
And the last time I was there, the last 2 years I was there, we had big rain and there was 2,200 square kilometres of water in the lake system. The three lakes there that join up with big rain.
You had a big stud operation there at one stage, didn't you? A huge stud operation.
It was a stud. I ran the stud for 12 months. It was a big operation, and during that time, we changed it, the stud operation as such, all the recording, just to a bull breeding herd, which made it a lot easier to manage, and because all the bulls were used internally, although we measured for weight gains and things, but it wasn't, you know, they weren't registered with the society.
But you used
because there wasn't any point.
Really. Yeah. But did you have the stud completely isolated from the rest of the property?
Yeah, well, in a sense, it was. I had a double fence. King Ranch spent all this money, put a double fence around it, and why? Because of the disease on the outside.
Yeah.
And it did work, like this, but there was no, I don't ever recall having any TB and or brucellosis in the stud herd. So it was a pretty big achievement, apart from the cost of the fencing. Big, big area of fencing and had to be maintained well. But yes, it worked. And without that, the bull breeding herd wouldn't have survived because, of, you know, TB could have ruined it.
Did you try some AI up there as well?
I personally didn't, but I know it did happen. And in the early days, you know, it was reasonably successful, but not really successful because the percentage, the calf percentage wasn't good. And I think the technology back then wasn't as good as obviously as it is today. And the people that were doing it were learning as they went. So it was tried, but wasn't very successful back then.
Time for a break. I'm talking with Jeff Wagstaff, former general manager of the AACo. Breathe easy with Rhinogard, the only single-dose intranasal vaccine for control of IBR in your cattle. Get in control of bovine respiratory disease, that's BRD, before it begins. Just deliver a single intranasal spray of Rhinogard for rapid IBR control and add a single dose of BoviShield MH1 for protection against pneumonia. For rapid protection against MH and IBR in your weaners and pre-feedlot cattle, breathe easy with BovaShield and Rhinogard. Available from your local vet today.
For over 180 years, Elders has proudly been supporting Australian livestock producers. Elders supports your business across the production cycle with more than 350 livestock agents, access to specialist livestock advice and auction services. Draw on our established relationships to buy and sell commercial and stud livestock across domestic and international markets. Enjoy Del Credere guaranteed payments when you sell with Elders. Livestock funding also available, subject to approval. Elders, for Australian agriculture.
Welcome back. You're on The Grill with Beef Central and my guest today, Jeffrey Wagstaff, former general manager of the AACo. Your association with AACo started later on at Brunette Downs. That's an interesting story. Tell us about that.
Well, that was in 1979. King Ranch sold Brunette Downs and Glenroy and Mount House. So it was Mount House, Glenroy and Brunette were all sold in 1979. And at that time, AA company bought it, and Trevor Smith said to me, we'd like you to go to Avon Downs, which is one of their places, and I in 1979, moved over there after they purchased that brunette, and lived there and managed that for 8 years.
Yeah.
And came back to Brunette as manager in 1987.
Yeah. Is this when Kenny Warriner got involved?
Well, Cannon was at Brunette there, Mount House, sorry.
Yeah.
He managed Mount House, and we were all there. And he moved to Brunette 12 months before I did. And, I was involved with him from Mount House and then Brunette. And then he moved off Brunette, and, so I've known Ken for years.
And that's when he got tangled up with Kerry Packer?
Yeah.
So I don't know whether tangled up is the right term, but got involved with them. Creating
something. He and a couple of others bought Newcastle Waters.
Do you recall the first time you saw some Brahmin cattle up that way?
Yes, that would have been probably about 20 years ago. There's Brahmin cattle. We actually put some red Brahmin bulls in the top end of Brunette to increase the adaptability of the country up there and the cattle. And during my time, I was also involved with the Brahmin breeding in the Gulf.
Yeah.
So, yes, I saw that come in. And, in fact, when I was at Wandoola, in the early 70s, that was all shorthorn. And the first road train loads of Brahmin bulls came in.
Yeah. Did anybody realise the potential of how Brahmin would come to dominate herds across northern Australia? Anybody realise how significant this was at the time?
Probably not then. They were all different. The only thing we enjoyed as the young fellows in a stock camp was the difference in moving them. Large numbers of cattle across large open plains, and these fellows just walked along. I know we walked them from the bitumen, the road going into Normandon through another property to Wandoola. It was just like walking a couple of hundred horses along. Yeah. They just followed the road, and we thought, how good is this? So that's the idea we thought about. But as far as what would happen in the future, I don't think no one understood how big it would become.
Indeed. Where were your markets at that time? I mean, there were meatworks across the north at that time, I suspect. So it was not as difficult as it is these days, but where were your markets?
Well, at Wandoola, the job with the stock camp was to produce as many weaners as we could each year, obviously, and then we'd walk for a drover.
Yeah.
The Renfrey family would walk them from Wandoola to Julia Creek, and that hold a special weaner sale, which is very popular. They knew they were good cattle, and they just had numbers and numbers of days on the road walking in, so they were very civilised at the other end, and people came to buy them. So that was the main turn-off for Wandoola.
Yeah.
Obviously, cold cows went to the works, but it wasn't. There was, that was obviously not to Julia Creek, but to other places closer to the coast.
Yeah, AAK then moved into composite breeds. Did they not explain that the reasoning for that and how it went?
No, I think the reasoning for it is we owned our own feedlot, and they were looking for a better meat eating experience for the cattle that went through that, and saw the composite could produce what they're looking for in the feedlot. So the feedlot was the real reason everything changed when it did. Like we sent in the old, when we used to walk cattle from the Barkley to the Channel Country, they just went down there and lived on grass and in a good season.
Yeah,
they did magnificently, and then they were sold as meatworks cattle, heavy cattle to the meatworks. So us having a feedlot, had to produce as many steers as we could to go through the feedlot. And instead of the cattle at Brunette Downs, where there was lots of thousands of bullocks, usually, became thousands of steers, and they'd leave Brunette about 450 kilos and travel to Gnu feedlot at Emerald.
Was AACo in the live export game at that time?
Yeah, it would have been on and off, yeah.
Yeah.
I know we used to sell spayed heifers from Brunette to the Philippines.
That was a very, very big market at one stage, wasn't it? Bigger than Indonesia, in fact, for a time.
Yeah, they just wanted these spayed heifers, and it was good for us, but don't know how many other people sold them, but they loved the cattle, and they did very well for them, obviously. They come back year after year and buy more.
Spayed heifers, that's an interesting assessment, but good luck to them. But so Indonesia was also a market, and a growing market, very significant, in fact.
Yeah, see, but that wasn't, you were talking AA company, that wasn't, some of the Gulf country AA owned at that time were live export cattle, but mainly on the Barkley, there wasn't a lot of live export. It was all through the feedlot or down to the Channel Country or sold direct to works.
You come to the 90s and late 90s and the involvement of Peter Holmes Accord. You were around then, weren't you, of course?
Yes, I was, yeah.
Okay. What was his aim for AACo?
Oh, I think to make it different. Peter started a few things, like a pie shop in Perth. The 1824 branded beef came in his time, and that ran its course. As people on the stations, we couldn't really understand about a pie shop in Perth, seeing all the cattle in the territory in Queensland, but that was Peter, and that's what he did, and a lot of other things he did during his time.
What was the toughest part of being general manager of AACo across those years, involving so many cattle and so much property?
Oh, I don't know. I just found all that very interesting, and without being silly about it, I think we had a really, really good team of people.
Yeah.
Everyone was very proud to wear the colours, the shirts, wave the flag for the company, and the culture was a big thing. That's what I liked about it.
Yeah.
Everyone was on the same page. Everyone was proud to go to work. Everyone worked hard and had, you know, good holidays and things at the end of the year and enjoyed each other's company. And what didn't I like? I don't know. There was anything I didn't like about it. Obviously, we have to, you know, the seasons come and go. They'll do that forever and always have done. So, you know, always worry about, are we going to get any rain and how dry it is. But we all helped each other, and I think it was just a really, really good environment.
How do you think management these days has changed from your times at AACo? The one thing that impresses me about living out there, working and running a joint that size, would be paperwork. Am I correct?
Oh, I think so. They've got a lot more technology now.
Yeah.
I can still remember the first fax machine we got. We all thought that was amazing. I was at Avondowns when it arrived. It was a few days before the Melbourne Cup, and someone in our head office faxed us the runners in the Melbourne Cup, and we all sat around this thing waiting for this piece of paper to come out, and that all sounds stupid, but that was exciting, actually. And that was just the start of our little bit of technology, and then computers came in, and as managers, we were all told that once these computers come in, you won't have any bookwork to do at all. But as you know, that's the absolute opposite these days. So I think it's totally different in the technology, the data recording, and the you can check waters from your mobile phone in your house hundreds of kilometres away.
You can turn them on and maybe your office in Melbourne.
Wherever you happen to be,
And the number of watering points that are being put across the north are quite extraordinary now, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, Renap was owned by the White family before King Ranch, and they spent a lot of money but were struggling and, you know, to spend the sort of money the King Ranch had and, you know, to put in more bores. And there is some surface water there. Well, the lake's big, but that's to do with growing grass and pasture, really.
Yeah.
But as far as water, there's not a lot of permanent water holes, so bores are the big thing.
Animal welfare is a bigger issue as well, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, that's good, though. It was needed to be. And I think all the swelling of cattle at the right times and all the stuff, cattle care, I think it was called, came in. And a lot of people didn't like that, but I don't know if I've got the right name there. But anyway, came in, but that tidied up all the vaccinations and all the recording. And I think that was a good thing as well, which just kept people, you know, recording what they were doing with their herds and their paddocks and all that thing. On paper, of course, in those days.
AACo now proudly claims to have one of the biggest Wagyu herds. You would have been involved in the early stages of that, I assume?
It was happening when I left, and I really wasn't involved, to be honest. I know it is there, I know it's big, and I know there's lots and lots of Wagyu cattle, but I really wasn't involved in that.
What do you think? I know people have opinions about how they look as cattle, but what do you think of what they're doing in terms of their beef production and...
I think the production and the money they made, the marbling paddocks is very, very good.
Yeah.
As far as what they look like, you know, the best of the beasts on the forequarter, which is...
Yeah, you've seen all the changes, haven't you? The British breeds across the north, the Shorthorns, et cetera, Santa cattle, Brahmins, and now you're seeing Wagyus. Now they're putting Wagyus across the Brahmins. It's remarkable, isn't it?
Yes, I've seen all that and been involved in a lot of it. And also, you missed in that things you just said, the composite breed were there.
Yeah, the composite breeds indeed.
They're still there, and the Wagyu as well.
And you've seen the death of meatworks across the north. Do you think they'll ever come back up north or not? Just too hard.
Well, I don't know. We'll just see what happens to this live export trade in the distant future. Yeah. So, you know, we know there's one park there not far out of Darwin that ran for a little while and it's closed down for the reasons that the cattle supply wasn't there. So I'm not sure. Because we had meatworks when I was at Brenner Downs. We had a meatworks in Tennant Creek.
Yes.
One in Catherine.
Catherine,
one in Mount Isa.
Yeah.
None of those three are working. Haven't been working for years. So it's just a different scene. And whether they'll come back, make you wonder, wouldn't it, really? I think
exactly.
Probably the Barkley country will still send them to the coast.
Yeah, Jeff, I'll drop a few names here and ask for a character reference for one or two of them or a mention of them. Schmidt, yep. Holmes of Court, Warriner, Sherwin, Packer, Smorgon. There's a few names there, and I'm sure I've missed a few. Who was the most remarkable characters that you met across your journey?
I really enjoyed working with Trevor Schmidt.
Yep.
He and I seem to think the same or whatever.
Yeah.
He was a very, very good people person. I learned stuff off him. I probably thought, he used to tell me stuff, and I think that's exactly what I think. And we just got off on well, and we'd drive around, we'd pick Avon. That's when I first had to manage for him. Avon Downs, so we'd drive around in the car and look at the cattle, and we'd work out the next 12 months, and I'd write in a notebook. That's how it was. It's not that like that anymore. No. I was with Ken Warren for a long time. We enjoyed each other and worked hard and did a good job of whatever we did. Smorgon was a name. Smorgon family, when King Ranch was selling Brunette, Ken was there, and he said, "Jeff, can you take these people around today, and I'll take so-and-so around." And so we split the cars up, and away we go. And I remember taking the Smorgons around. I remember taking Peter Sherwin. He was a northern neighbour at that time. And I don't know, who else did you put on that list? I think that was a lot of them, wasn't it?
Oh, well, it's KP, of course, Mr. Packer.
When we were at Mount House, he used to come over. And I imagine that's where he and Ken got to know each other the best. Yeah. He'd come over for a break and do things he couldn't do in Sydney, like driving, coming out in bull catches, catching clean skin bulls and having a good time.
Jeff, you've seen it all from Jackaroo to general manager. You got faith in the future of the beef industry?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. There's always something on the sideline saying, plastic meat and all this stuff, and I don't believe in that. And I think people that generally enjoy their meat can't see the future not being there for ever.
Any great threats on the horizon that the industry might be aware of, and any wonderful opportunities perhaps we should be looking at?
Oh, I think the feedlot industry has changed. That wasn't there once. That's why all the cattle were walked to the Channel Country. But the feedlot industry is there now in a big way. You would know there's thousands and thousands of cattle on feed, and I think that's changed things. Where they're a lot younger, and the turn off weights are up because of the feedlot, and the turn off age is down. And given grain prices are okay, there is money to be made in that.
That
keeps the cattle flow happening. They're being bred, they're being grown out somewhere, they're going through a feedlot, they're being killed somewhere. So I think that's all good management and good practice to make that happen that way.
Jeff Wagstaff, you've done it all. Jackaroo to general manager, rubbing shoulders with some of the biggest names in the history of beef. Thank you for giving us your time on The Grill for Beef Central.
Thanks, Gary. It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
And thank you for joining us. Until next time, I'm Kerry Lonigan. This has been The Weekly Grill, brought to you by Elders and Rhinogard by Zoetis.